Sunday. Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Glink Show 2012 edition. I think in honor of the presidential election cycle, we're going to call this year Think Link 2012. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Lines are wide open. So excited to help you this year to spend less, save more, avoid getting ripped off, as Clark Howard likes to say, but also to make more thoughtful, intelligent decisions about where you want to go with your money. This is going to be the year, I feel it, that we are going to hopefully work our way out of where we are. We've had some very good news this week on the jobs front, very encouraging. We're seeing the national unemployment rate drop a little bit, and there's just, stock market continues to go up. It was up this week, 142 points, ending the week at 12,359. There's loads to talk about. The IRS is just about open for business. I believe it starts this week. So we've got a whole bunch of new stuff to do. We are online. If you've never checked out my website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. If you'd like to follow my real estate musings, you might also check out CBS News Money Watch, or you could just go to moneywatch.com. It'll take you to the landing page there where we are blogging about all kinds of stuff, including that the federal housing officials extended for unemployed people, gave everybody a little bit of a break over the holiday weekend. We'll talk about that a little bit down the line as well. And then finally, the Equifax Finance blog, where we have all kinds of really interesting people blogging about all kinds of things really important to you, like insurance and taxes and real estate and anything that you think would be important about your credit. So join us online at all of those places. All right, so let's start with the numbers. Again, the Dow ended up 142 points at 12,359 and change. That was good. Non-farm payrolls. I honestly, when the ADP number came out earlier in the week at 350,000 jobs created, I thought there's just no way that we created that many jobs, but we did create 200,000 jobs in December. That's non-farm payrolls. The jobless rate fell unexpectedly to 8.5%, lowest level in nearly 3 years. But at the same time, we also saw November's job gain revised down to 100,000. We also saw the New York Fed President William Dudley, who said the unemployment outlook remains unacceptably high relative to the Fed's goals. We also saw that a huge number of those jobs that were created were couriers. So how much of this is seasonal? If you looked a year ago, we had a similar number of courier jobs created. All of them were reversed in January. So it could be that this is just not quite as good as it seems, but hey, on the face of it, we'll take it. If nothing else, it was a psychic boost that we all got that the unemployment rate dipped a little bit again. We still are seeing an unacceptably low level of participation in the employment industry. That's a problem, but we're going to watch what's going on. The Federal Reserve, it's been interesting. There's a lot going on in Europe. I don't know if you've been watching this over the holiday week, but the euro is now trading at about $1.20. There's noise from Greece that it might go back to the drachma, which actually would make Greece the premier vacation destination because everything would be repriced in drachmas and the deals would be absolutely amazing. But I don't know. I don't know how good that would be for all of Europe. So we still have to watch what's going on there. The European Common Bank, the ECB, resumed buying Italian and Spanish debt. That cost on the 10-year Italian government bonds rose above 7% this week. The euro fell. It was the 16-month low against the dollar. We talked about that. Not such a great move there. And we're watching our Fed respond as well to what's going on. So, you know, a lot of different things. Of course, the election is front and center, and we've got all kinds of interesting things going on there. We saw the Iowa, what happened in Iowa. Everybody's moving to New Hampshire now. I think this is just going to take over the whole conversation, really, for the next 9 months. And do you know what? You know what happens, of course, is as you're in an election year, things in business tend to slow down, right? There's a lot of uncertainty as to what direction the government's going to go in. And so homes typically are sold at a slower pace. Now, will it be this year when mortgage interest rates this week touch the all-time record low again of like under 4% for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage? I don't know. It seemed like there might be some pickup going on in the housing industry, but there's still a huge amount of backlog. There's a big number of foreclosures that have been put on hold for the holiday. Those are going to start picking up again. So not quite sure how we're going to see that all play out. Sort of a sad thing, Eastman Kodak readying for bankruptcy production. I just thought, what an amazing brand that company was, and how sad it is that it just isn't. I don't know. It's falling apart. The world is really changing, and very quickly. If you don't keep up, you'll be left behind. 404-872-0750. We'll do more catch-up news in a little bit. But I want to get to the phones. There's some lines open still. A couple of people on hold. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Jill joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Jill. Welcome to the Elise Glink Show, and happy 2012.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Mine is... My husband and I are thinking, we probably won't retire for another 10 years, but we're thinking part of the income would nice be from dividends if we need it. If we don't need it right now, but maybe in the future, we're thinking moving more of our portfolio to dividend stocks.
Okay.
So I'm looking for ones that had a long run, that paid out for a while and are consistent and things like that. So I wonder if you had any suggestions.
You know, I don't generally make individual stock recommendations, and partly that is because about, and I'm trying to remember how many years ago it was. I've been doing this show about, I don't know, 12, 13 years, and about maybe 6 years ago, I just threw my hands up at what was going on, and so I divested my portfolio, which had about 60 different companies in it, and went with index mutual funds to have basically a very similar experience, except I was dividing my risk. But here's what I like about the idea that you have, which is to look at dividend stocks as a way of providing some value. There are companies out there, for example, Paychex, which is one that I've looked at similarly. Paychex is one of the largest payroll companies in the country. They own a company that I work with called Sure Payroll. They bought them last year, about a year ago. They compete directly with ADP.
Mm-hmm.
Their stock price is somewhere around $30 at the moment, and the dividend that they're paying out is somewhere between 4 and 6%, depending on where the stock price is. It's a really strong company. I'm not endorsing it in any way. I'm just,
yeah.
You know, I've taken a look at it. I have not personally bought this company.
Are there index funds that pay dividends?
Well, there are. So there are all kinds of funds out there, and you can do them as index funds or exchange-traded funds that focus on companies that pay dividends. And they include companies like Paychex and like IBM and, you know, like Caterpillar, all these companies that actually pay dividends. And so what you do with that, rather than trying to get lucky, which honestly in today's stock market requires a super amount of skill, and even then, a lot of times you don't get lucky. Instead, what you're doing is diversifying into a place where you're either buying an index of dividend-paying stocks or somebody's picking them, but there's maybe 400 of them that are all contributing to the pot. I would much rather see you go to a Fidelity, a Charles Schwab, Vanguard, and look for a fund that specifically invests in dividend-paying companies.
Okay, yeah, that would be a little safer.
I just feel like, and it's interesting because I've been reading the Steve Jobs book that Walter Isaacson wrote, and it's so interesting to read about how somebody like this is thinking about a company and how you're growing a company and all the stuff that goes on with the repricing of the options. I don't know if you remember, but Apple did a whole bunch of repricing of options that when a bunch of other companies were doing it. And there, it struck me then, and I continue to believe that there are so many ways to play with the numbers that you and I, no matter how much time, would never go find, that you've got to protect yourself in a different way. And so my solution for that has been to move into mutual funds. And I think you'll find it to be more helpful in that direction.
Okay, thank you. I didn't really think about the index funds or dividends, but it does sound like a better option.
I think you might really like it. And at the end, let's say you buy that, but you do find an individual company that you really believe in after doing all this work, right? Then you can still spend a little money and buy 500 shares of that if you want, or 100 or 50 or whatever makes sense for your portfolio. But I would much rather, instead of putting all your eggs in one basket, to have a really diversified basket so that you really are protecting what you've worked so hard to achieve.
Okay, thank you very much for your advice. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Jill. Happy New Year. 16 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show, 404-872-0750. Steve joins us on the line from Woodstock. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Elyse. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you to you as well. What's going on in your world?
Well, I just had a couple of questions, Elyse. I have a 401k at work that if I contribute 5%, which I have been doing, they match, I think, up to like a quarter. The most that I can get per year from the company match is about $600 for stocks.
$600?
That's all, $600.
Okay.
Of course, I know that's $600.
Yeah, but it's free money.
Right. My question is, I hopefully will work for this same company for the next 15 years, and that'll put me at 70. And I've got about $5,000 a year that I want to put in a savings vehicle,
mm-hmm.
to use, you know, for retirement. And I didn't know whether it would be better to bump my 401k up, you know, past what I have to do to get the match, or put the rest in a Roth.
I like the idea of the Roth if you qualify for it. So this year, are you married or single?
Married.
Okay. So married couples for 2012, I believe it's like $169,000 or $170,000. At the break, I'll look up the exact number and announce it when we come back.
Okay.
And so if you qualify under that income level, and great, you can put in up to $6,000 for you and up to $6,000 for your spouse, provided she's over the age of 50. Right.
Okay.
So
right.
What I like about this, and it's kind of what I said to Jill, right?
Right.
It gives you so much more flexibility in what you do. You're putting in after-tax money, which will then grow tax-free forever. And even though your tax bracket may change downward,
right?
It may not. Because what may happen down the line, and none of us know this, of course, is, and it's entirely possible, that our tax rates will go up at some point in time.
Well,
and if they don't go up on a federal level, they may well go up on a state level.
So with the Roth, it's up to $6,000 if you meet the requirements, the income requirements.
That is correct. It's $5,000, but if you're over the age of 50, you get to add another $1,000 in as a catch-up provision.
Okay, well, after a couple of years, I could bump it up to that, where we took advantage of one of the automakers. You know, we'd never bought a new car before, and I got the 0%, and
mm-hmm.
don't plan on paying that off. But in a couple of years, I could probably bump it on up to that max. So that's a good idea.
Is your wife working?
Yes, she is. She works for the school system, and she has her own plan through work. I forgot what it's called.
Mm-hmm. Like a five. She probably has like a, I don't know, whatever they're called, five something. You know what? It's the first show of the year. My brain's not quite back in gear yet. But she may also qualify for a Roth IRA. And if she can find a way to put aside her $5,000 or $6,000, depending on how old she is, that's a significant amount of money you guys are going to be able to put away and have access to. And what it gives you, which is the best thing of all, it gives you options in retirement. So she'll be in an annuity with the school system, and you'll be having the option of paying taxes on your 401k money, which you'll by then have rolled into an IRA. You'll be getting Social Security, but now you want to take out some money and not pay taxes on it. You'll have this Roth IRA cash.
That sounds like a great idea, Elyse. Thanks so much. I really enjoy your program.
Oh, thanks for saying that, Steve. Happy New Year. It's 20 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Think Glink 2012, 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elyse Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Happy 2012, everybody. 404-872-0750. Online, thinkglink.com. So I looked up the Roth IRA contribution limits for 2012. If your filing status is married filing jointly or a qualifying widow or widower, and your modified adjusted gross income is at least $173,000, you cannot make a Roth IRA contribution. A full one, you get between, so it's 172,999.99 or less, so under 173,000 married filing jointly, If you're single, head of household, or married filing separately, the limit's $110,000. And then there's sort of a reduced contribution up to, if you're married, $183,000, or if you're single, up to $125,000. So that's pretty much how it's going to work. So those numbers are big. And then the amount that you can put in is still $5,000 plus $1,000 for your $1,000 for the catch-up if you are the age of 50 or older. Now, the new rules are all out for Publication 590, which is your individual retirement arrangements. And this is where you get all of the information, not just for the Roth IRA, but for the regular IRA contributions as well. So, for example, for 2011, for 2012, but 2012 is you know, you're paying your taxes for 2011, right? So this is the filing year for 2011, even though it's April 17th. The modified adjusted gross limit for traditional IRA contributions has increased. If you were covered by a retirement plan at work, your deduction for contributions to a traditional IRA is reduced or phased out. If you're over $90,000 but less than $110,000 for a married couple filing jointly, more than $56,000 but less than $66,000 for a single individual or head of household, and less than $10,000 for a married individual filing a separate return. Okay? So there is great information there. I typed in Roth IRA limits 2012. The IRS is doing something right with its search engine optimization because it popped right up. Or you can go to IRS.gov and look up Publication 590, what's new for 2012. It is 27 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a short break, come back to all kinds of questions. Everybody's lined up now. We've got everybody online. We're also doing some tweeting. So I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K on Twitter. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page as well, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, Think Link 2012. 404-872-0750 is our number, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter when you're there, and follow me on Twitter. We had a very fun conversation, active conversation, when I was filling in for Clark at the end of the year. And just lots of great stuff going on Twitter, at least on my Twitter. So happy to have you on board at GLINK. 36 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the phones. Farron joins us on the line from Ackworth. Hi, Farron.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I've got a fairly simple question, I think, that a lot of folks probably have, and that is, of course, we took advantage of the real estate market when prices were very low relative to the value of the properties. So we bought another home.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we did have also one to sell. So for a while, I had two mortgages, one for each home.
Right.
Eventually, I was able to sell this house. And the price I sold it for was quite considerably less than I paid for it. Now, I didn't buy this house from a person. I had this home built. My question is, do I have any recourse to recover the amount that we lost compared to the price I paid to have it built? I know the assessed value probably, that's a kind of a made-up number anyway, but the price that I paid to build the property versus what I sold it for.
Well, what do you mean, where can you recoup? You mean recoup as in file it as a loss on your taxes?
Yes, ma'am. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
It doesn't actually work that way. So the house, even though you paid for that asset, right? So let's say you buy a new car, and you pay $30,000 for the car, and after 5 years you sell the car for $15,000. You've had a loss, right?
Correct.
But there is no place in your taxes to take that loss. The same is true for housing. So if this were an investment property, it would be different. So if you were renting out that property and you bought it for $300,000 and you sold it for $150,000, that would be a loss that over time you would be able to recoup against other kinds of similar income.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a personal property, you don't get to do that. On the other hand, you bought a new house that I assume was bigger in a better neighborhood.
Yes.
For a much lower amount of money than you really should have been able to in a normal market. And so if that house should have been $300,000, but you only paid $150,000 for it, right?
Right.
You're buying at an amazing price point, and over the years that you're there, hopefully that property will rise in value. Whereas your property, your other property, probably might not have gotten back to the $300,000 you paid to build it, like in 25 or 30 years.
Right.
So that's how real estate works. It's very difficult to buy low and sell high in the same marketplace without moving to another place. You sold low, but you bought really low, and you actually leveraged up your purchase because you bought a bigger house in a nicer neighborhood for a lot less money. And so you could say that you actually made money in the transaction. That's how you recouped what you lost on the other property.
Okay. So the way that we went with getting a bigger, better home from where we were, in the end, it was all going to wash, and or we should make a little bit in the future should the market recover.
Exactly. And, you know, with the other property, if you had converted it to a rental property, for example, and you rented it out, that might have changed the dynamic.
Okay.
But in this case, that's how you make the money. And, you know, all of us spent 20 years learning that real estate was an investment, only to realize over the last 6 or 7 years that real estate isn't as much of an investment as we thought.
Right. So, you know, you have to report capital gains. I'm going, well, gee whiz, you know, we're kind of went the other way here. You know, and I can only claim, of course, the taxes for the property you live in now. So
well,
it's all gone away then.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about capital gains, which is interesting because you don't actually pay tax on the capital gains. You have a kind of a free pass for up to $500,000.
Right.
If you lived in the house at least 2 years.
Right, we were in that house for 10.
Right, and so if you had made $500,000, that would have been tax-free.
Oh, yeah, we're pretty familiar with how that works.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. So, but, you know, it's unfortunate. This is a situation where, you know, there's nothing that I know of in the tax code that would permit you to do it, but, of course, you should talk to your tax advisor and just double-check to make sure that you haven't shared everything and I don't know everything, so maybe something else.
It's just a general question that I had not heard much conversation about, and I'm sure many folks are trying to take advantage of the current market. I mean, we'd love to buy another one. Money as it is.
Well, you know, here's the situation for most people. Most people are underwater with their mortgages. So they paid $300,000 for the house. They have a $280,000 mortgage, and the house is worth $100,000.
Oh, yeah. See, over the course of the years, we've done what we think is the right thing, which is we bought a house, sold that, maybe made a little bit, took that, rolled it into the next one, to the next one, to the next one. Now we come to this part, and we're going, oh, wait a minute now, it's worth less, we're not underwater, but it's an awful lot of money, cash money, not bank money or paper money.
No, it's just equity. It's money that you built up over the years, and it is completely evaporated, and unfortunately that's what's happened in this recession.
Thank you very much for your insight. I wasn't sure how it would work going the other way, and now I know. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling the show, Farron. 42 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Klink Show. Daniel joins us on the line. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to the program.
Well, how are you doing this morning, Elyse?
I'm doing fantastic. What about you?
You know what? I can't complain. Nobody ever listens, so just don't do it. But I think I've got a simple question for you. It's complicated for me, but over the past 3 years, we have, my wife and I have managed to accumulate a rather substantial credit card debt, using some of that money to pay for college for two of our kids, which we realize now it was a mistake, but, you know, in the end had no other course. And the credit card debt's about $35,000.
Okay.
And, I'm gainfully employed, as is my wife, and I have about $180,000 in investments that are gaining, you know, I would say substantial gains, but moderate, backwards and forwards like everyone else over the years. I'm trying to, it's the payments I'm making toward this credit card debt is about $600 a month. And I'm trying to figure out a way to get out of this credit card debt, and it just seems like it's endless now, and we don't particularly want to borrow any money to pay it down. Any advice?
What is the amount of your income for you and your wife? Gross annual income?
$200,000.
Okay. Seems to me that you might be able to find a way over the next 3 years to pay down $10,000 to $15,000 a year on this
right.
out of your $200,000, and it involves some serious belt tightening.
Gotcha.
So you could take it out of your investments and then pay back your investments, but at $200,000 a year, unless you have some extraordinary expenses right now, you ought to be able to find a place to save about $10,000 or $15,000 a year.
Well, you know, my extraordinary expenses right now are two kids in college.
Are they still in college?
Oh, yes.
And do you get proper loans for them now?
You know, at this point, when you get to a certain level of income, nobody wants to loan you any money. it's been difficult for us to get financial aid for either one of our kids, a small amount, but nothing substantial. And I guess, you know, my main question is, and I don't know if I asked it correctly, I realize that if I take money out of my investments, which are, there were 401k, rollover into mutual funds, the penalties and fees that I'm going to assess for doing that to pay off this debt, does that make any sense at all?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Especially if you're not over the age of 59, you pay the extra 10% penalty. I would not do that.
Okay.
Do you have a 401k at your current employer that allows to borrow, that you can borrow from?
Well, you know what? I don't participate in it. Most of my stuff is managed by a fee-only person who I've been working with for about 20 years. And
so you don't put any money away in a 401k?
Not at this time.
Okay. I think you and your wife have to sit down and look at what you're spending.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys are going to have to make some tough choices.
You're right.
So, I mean, I will tell you that one of my favorite things that one of our listeners shared when we talk about places to save money is, you know, they still like to go out for dinner, but they instituted a no beverage rule. And
nice.
Just no beverages for the adults, no beverages for the kids, and they were able to save almost $10,000 a year that way.
Wow.
I think there are some really clever and creative places that you guys are going to have to cut, but I can tell you that it means, you know, no new cars, no vacation this year. I mean, whatever you're doing,
right.
You know, for kids' college, and I think that you just haven't wanted to make the tough choices yet, but I think it's time to make the tough choices and just get serious about paying it off. I mean, technically, if you were really serious about it and you'd met some of my listeners, as I have over the years, you'd be like, that $35,000 would be gone by, say, June. So I'm giving you a challenge here, Daniel. The challenge is go take a really hard look at what you're spending and what you're spending it on and start making the tough choices you know you need to make. Because you know what? It's too expensive to take any of your investment money out.
You're right. And, you know, I have made the first step, Elise. We cut up all our credit cards, with the exception of one of the debit cards that my wife uses just for shopping. But I carry nothing but cash around with me now. So that was a major decision.
I think that's a really helpful decision, although I hope you didn't cancel those credit cards because you're going to need the credit.
No.
You just cut them up. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I also think that you should take a look at sort of what your day-to-day expenditures are.
Right.
Even little small things like a cup of coffee for $5 a day translates into $1,500 a year.
You got that right. That makes sense. And Lynn and I both realize that we got to do something here, and I just, you know, I listened to you. I'm I work sometimes on Sundays. I just go to the office, and I was listening to your show, and I thought, well, I'm going to try to give her a call and see if I can get some good advice, and I can tell her I did. So I got a dose of some tough medicine, but, hey, it's all good, and I really appreciate your show, Elise, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Daniel. What I would love for you to do is call me back in 6 months.
Okay.
And let me know what you have done with that $35,000 in debt, because my sense of it is after this conversation, you're going to go home, you guys are going to open up a beer, and you're going to get some paper out and a pencil, and you're going to get really serious. And once you get serious, once you make that decision, the debt is going to start melting away, because, you know, unlike right. many other people, you guys actually make a decent amount of money.
Right.
And
right.
you can make these choices even with two kids in college.
I hear you.
All right. Well, let me know what happens.
Okay. Thanks, Elise.
You're welcome. Have a great year. 48 minutes past the hour on the Elise Klein. I call it 49 minutes. 404-872-0750. You know, Daniel's situation is a good one for him because he does have the income coming in. But there are some places that you can go to get help to figure out whether your budgeting is off and what you're actually spending. As you know, if you've listened to the show, I'm a huge fan of Quicken and QuickBooks. But you can go to mint.com and you can put all of your budget information in there. You can take advantage of their huge resources in terms of interesting information, bloggers, all kinds of people. There are 6 million people who are now on Mint sharing their personal information and the tips and tricks that they're using to stay on top of it. That's something that you can absolutely do, and it makes all the sense in the world, because what you're really trying to do, folks, right? What you're really trying to do is live within your means. And when you want to live within your means, right, and you decide to make the tough choices, it's not that hard. It all becomes really simple as you back it down and you begin to understand that choices have to be made. And the choices don't have to be, like, they don't have to change everything about your life, but if you really want to get something done, that's what you have to do. All right, we've got the latest news, weather, and traffic coming up. We have in today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution a report that examines the upcoming 2012 Georgia legislative session, with a special look at Georgians' to-do list for state lawmakers. 10 before the hour on AM 750 and on 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions, only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
54 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us today. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Jennifer joins us on the line from Stockbridge. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Elise. I wanted to ask you a question. I'm a school teacher during the year, but I run a business during the summer teaching swimming lessons. And trying to keep costs low and that type of thing, I do all of my taxes myself, and I own the pool that I work out of. But the last summer, our business grew, and we were able to use another facility. And the way I worked it out with that other facility to be able to use their pool, it was a daycare, basically, that had idle time. Their pool wasn't being used. And so the daycare got a commission, a percentage off of any of our sales that we did at their pool. How do I claim that on taxes?
Well, if you paid them, it's like you paid them a fee, and so you would do a 1099 to them. If it was, it's usually $600. I don't know if you went over that, but
yes.
I would send, if you paid it anyway to them, I would send them a 1099 for the amount that was paid, and then that becomes a deduction against your business income. So if your business earned, let's say, $10,000 for the summer, and you paid $1,000 to the pool, to this daycare company, then your net income would be, assuming you have no other deductions and expenses, which of course aren't true, but it would be $9,000, right?
Right.
So you have to... That's kind of.
I didn't know if I do it as a 1099 or if it goes in a different place. I was thinking it was a 1099, but I just wasn't sure, because I'm used to 1099ing people, but not necessarily another business.
No, actually, you also, it used to be you didn't have to 1099 another business. You could just deduct the cost. But I think when you have a significant expense like that, and it's over $600, I think it's helpful to do a 1099, because I think it's helpful for them. right? Because then they acknowledge what they have and what they've gotten, and it's helpful for you as well. Do you keep your expenses on a QuickBook? How do you manage your business expenses?
I do. I just keep an Excel spreadsheet of everything. I used to use QuickBooks a long time ago, but I don't know. I guess it's just been easier for me to keep it all in an Excel spreadsheet. I know I should probably go to something a little bit more high-tech than that.
Well, if there's nothing wrong with an Excel spreadsheet if you have a very simple business you're running for 2 months a year or 3 months a year and you're not making that much money off of it. But if your business starts to grow and you end up making more money, or you're, you know, managing several different locations and you've got people who are working for you, I think you're going to find Excel not quite robust enough.
Right.
And you may want at that point to do something else. Now, I still use Excel for things like pro formas and different businesses. We create spreadsheets all day long. Honestly, I feel like it's a spreadsheet machine.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, when it comes, because my businesses are a little more complicated now, we have employees and all the rest, you know, we moved on years ago to QuickBooks, and they're not the only ones, but you just see how you grow. I mean, it's good that you're growing, right?
Yes, it is very good that we're growing. And, in fact, we just picked up this month a hotel that's letting us use their pool as an indoor pool. And so we're able to pick up some Saturday lessons now during the school year. So I really am looking forward to, in the future, it is going to grow more and more and more. And at some point, I'm very much a control freak, though, so it's very hard for me to let go of some of the things that I do and realize that I need help and I need someone else to help me do it.
I got to tell you, I am in your same shoes. I am also control freak about my business, and it has been the biggest lesson to learn how to delegate and let other people who are qualified handle some of these things. But you still have to stay on top of it as the business owner. I think if you are going to start to expand like this, you're going to want to work with, do you have an accountant that you're working with or a bookkeeper?
No, I don't. And this will sound really bad, but my bachelor's degree is in accounting.
Wonderful.
However, I graduated, you know, in 1997 and then went on to get my master's in education. And so I teach architectural drafting. So having not used accounting since 1997, aside from doing my own simple little tax returns, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it type of thing.
I think, Jennifer, you're going to find that this is the year you're going to have your taxes done professionally for the business, and you're going to start to think about and spend a little bit of time thinking about how you're going to manage the growth of this company. But the most exciting thing of all is that you're growing, and you've got a plan for the growth, and you're managing that plan, and you're understanding what your weaknesses are, which is the delegating and figuring out how to lose a little bit of the control freakish side of you. All of that is great news. And so best wishes for 2012. Let me know how it goes. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling. 59 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with a whole nother hour on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Whoa. Whoa. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Live on Sundays, 11 to 1, back to our regularly scheduled time here on News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, visit my Facebook fan page, join all the fun, sign up for the weekly newsletter. There's all kinds of good stuff coming from ThinkLink. One of the things that was sort of interesting that happened just this week is that Freddie Mac decided to offer a break to unemployed homeowners. Unemployed homeowners will be allowed to suspend or reduce their mortgage payments for as long as a year under a new policy that was announced by Freddie Mac on Friday. I wrote about it on MoneyWatch.com if you want to see the whole thing. The new rules don't take effect, though, until February 1st. Now, under these rules, and I assume that Fannie Mae will follow suit as well, Freddie Mac will give mortgage servicers the authority to provide 6 months of forbearance to unemployed borrowers without prior approval, meaning they don't have to, Bank of America doesn't have to now go to Freddie Mac for this, they can just do it. And the agency, Freddie Mac, can approve an additional 6 months of forbearance beyond that. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't have to pay off your full mortgage plus interest after the forbearance period ends. You do. But you can now, according to the news release that we got from Freddie Mac, unemployed borrowers can now avoid foreclosure by asking their lender to lower their payments for up to a year. The latest statistics, and by the way, the number of people who are delinquent on their loans went up in the third quarter. The latest statistics suggest that nearly 10% of delinquencies on Freddie Mac mortgages are tied to unemployment. This is not a really huge surprise. Now, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, FHFA, which regulates Freddie and Fannie, called for the extension because they're hoping that it will keep more families in their homes. And if you heard what we were talking about last hour, the Fed, all of the Fed governors except one, over this last couple of days, went on the stump talking about how the housing industry has to recover if we're going to have a real recovery from this great recession. And it's not really recovering quite as well as you would want. Part of that is tied to the unemployment issue. Part of that is tied to the fact that there's like 1.5 million homeowners who are behind, seriously delinquent in their mortgages, and another 2 million who are still in the foreclosure process already. And while that's not a huge number, it's still a big number. It's far above where it should be, and it's still a significant number, and it's having lasting consequences because people's home prices are still falling. When you have a foreclosure down the street from you, even if your house looks great and you've made all your mortgage payments, your property price is going to go down. So what people are hoping is that if you can get people to avoid foreclosure during these prolonged periods of unemployment, and we're also seeing that people are taking longer and longer to get a job. That's where this unsteadiness in the job market comes from, right? It's taking a long time for some people to get employed again or re-employed. This is a way for people who are unemployed to get help. Now, they've offered this program last year, but it was only 3 months of forbearance. So now they are going to 6 months plus another 6 months, so for a total of a year. If you are interested in learning about the forbearance program that your lender is offering, if you have a Freddie Mac mortgage, and you can find that at freddiemac.com, right? But if you're interested in learning more about it, you have to contact your mortgage servicers. But I'm saying this with all hope, with all possible prayer, right? I'm hopeful that by February 1st, this will have trickled down into the consciousness of all the people who actually take your phone calls at the end of the 800 number, the toll-free number for your lender, because you're supposed to contact your mortgage servicer as the first step to getting approved for part of this program. You can also call the Hope for Homeowners hotline at 888-995-HOPE, 888-995-HOPE. The other end of the line are HUD-certified housing counselors, and they may be able to help. So things to know, it's only Freddie Mac at the moment. I assume Fannie Mae will follow along, and none of this takes effect until February 1st. You've got three more weeks to wait, and hopefully that's going to make a difference. 404-872-0750. I'm going to apologize. I have a little bit of a cold today. 12 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phones. Joe joins us on the line. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Elise. Enjoy your show.
Thank you. What's going on today?
Well, my wife and I, we're some of those folks that you're talking about that are underwater with our home.
Okay.
We're fortunate, though. We still have good jobs that can make our payments, but we wanted to take advantage of the interest rates and convert from a 30-year 6% down to one of the new or a 15-year product. And I read up on the unfortunately, we still owe a good bit on our mortgage. And so
how much is your mortgage and how much is the value of your house?
We actually own a small farm, and so the mortgage amount we owe is with a first and second is around $580, and probably the appraisal values have dropped now about 40 or 50% to where it would only appraise around $500 at best.
Okay.
So my question is, I looked at some of the HARP information, the HARP 2.0, but
yep,
it doesn't look like it's going to help someone in our situation. They I had heard they were going to raise the amounts they would allow, but it's still a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac product, and we're not on a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac mortgage.
Right.
So I wondered if you had any ideas about how I could get into a 15-year mortgage.
You're in a really tough spot because you're right. The HARP 2.0 is Fannie and Freddie, and you owe $580. So unless you can come to the table with $160,000, which is pretty hard, you're not going to be able to apply for that. Who is your lender?
Well, I believe it's being serviced by City Mortgage, but it's been resold. So I contacted them and didn't have any luck that route.
Okay. Unfortunately, the USDA, you're a farm, so USDA makes loans, but their loan limit is lower than where you are as well. Is there a way to separate out some of the property from the actual house?
Yes, that's possible that it could be divided.
What is the first mortgage amount?
About $530.
Ooh, okay.
Let me ask you this. I have some emergency cash and some stock, and then I also have a pretty large 401k. Would it make sense for me to make a withdrawal out of that 401k?
Yes, it might make a lot of sense to do that. Simply paying down your mortgage so that you could get a primary loan at 417 will go a long way towards helping you out at the moment. First of all, you'd no longer be underwater. Right, so if you paid $160,000 out of that, let's say you had that much that you could take out, are you over the age of 50? By the way,
at 50.
You're right at 50. Okay, so the problem with making the withdrawal from the 401k is that you are going to pay a penalty for it. So you want to minimize that amount as much as possible. But if you're only at 530. You might be able to just pay $100,000 or $110,000, right, instead of $160,000. It's $110,000, get yourself the first mortgage down to $417,000. That might help you refinance, even though you have the second mortgage that's higher.
Gotcha.
So those are some possibilities. How much do you actually have in those accounts?
I probably have $100,000 in the stock and cash accounts.
Okay.
And of course, I didn't want to drain those completely.
Right.
But and then my 401k has around $500,000.
Can you borrow from the 401k?
But they limit that to $50,000. I checked that.
Okay, so if you borrow $50,000, but you have $100,000 in the cash and stock, you do the whole $50,000. You only really need $110,000. Ideally, to get yourself to 417 for the first, and then you might be able to go to Bank of America and Bank of America or Citi and just do a straight refinance, because then you shouldn't be underwater anymore. You won't have a lot of equity, but you shouldn't be underwater technically. And they may be able to do a jumbo loan for you on a 15-year at 4%. That might help you out.
Okay.
But one question I just have for you is, you know, is it that the 6% is driving you crazy and you feel like you could be at 3%? Is that the problem? Or you just want to get down to the 15-year? Or where is the real problem for you with the amount that you have?
I guess that's right. It's just the knowledge that the rates are so low right now, and a few years from now they may not be, and I wanted to get into that. And also my age at 50, that I didn't like the idea of having a 30-year mortgage. Of course, I know I could just pay down the principal, and maybe that's the alternate strategy.
Well, so let's talk about that for a minute, because if you pay down a significant chunk of this loan, then you're basically putting yourself into better than a 15-year payoff. How many years do you have left right now?
25.
So if you paid $100,000 on this, 50 from the borrowing against the 401k and $50,000 in your cash and stock, right? You're going to pay down this loan significantly, and you won't really be paying 6% anymore, right? You're paying yourself 6% because you're prepaying on the mortgage, but you're going to get yourself right side up on the property, and then if you do a one-time payment, you can have the loan re-amortized if you want. But my guess is that one-time payment will take you from 25 years to 15, right at there. So what you're paying now, anything else you pay down, you're going to be paying at a much faster rate. You're still paying it at the 6%, but you're also not paying $6,000 to refinance, and you may not even be able to refinance for a while. But at least you're getting yourself off of 25 years to 15 years in one fell swoop.
Okay.
So I don't want you to feel bad about it being a 6% mortgage. Yes, would it be better to not be a 6% mortgage? Of course it would. But you're going to get yourself pretty far ahead, and if you just start throwing massive amounts of cash at this, I can promise you that this year we're not going to see mortgage interest rates go up. I really don't believe that's going to be the case this year. So you have a whole year to get yourself to a place where you might be able to do a refinance and have it go pretty well.
Okay.
So take a long view. Take a longer view. And just try and figure out what's going to be the best thing. And certainly if you went to a couple of different lenders, you could have a conversation that goes something like, assume that this loan is at 417 and this loan is still at, you know, 40,000, you know, and assume that the property value is X. What are some of my options here? And you want to go with the lenders that do the jumbo loans that are bigger, and the ideal amount would be to get rid of, once you're below, you know, once you actually have some positive equity again, get to a place where they can actually say yes to you.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, well, let me know what happens.
Okay, Elise, thanks.
You're welcome, Joe. Good luck. 20 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSV.
24 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show. Thanks so much for joining us today. Let's go back to the phones. Tony joins us on the line. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
Hi. I had a question about being able to write off a loss on a rental property.
Okay.
I've had somebody in a house this past year, but they became unemployed, and I went about 6 months kind of riding it through with them, and I still have a mortgage on the house, so I made the mortgage payments, didn't get any income from the renters, and I want to know if I'm able to write off that loss.
It depends. So is real estate, when you put down what you do, your employment, is real estate your full-time job, or this is just a part-time thing?
It's just a part-time thing.
So typically you can write off some of these losses. You may not be able to write off all of them, though, in the year. It just depends what you're writing off against. But you will be able to use these losses going forward, certainly.
Okay. You know, I carry my own insurance on the property. I pay the taxes.
Oh, no. The fact that you've got all the expenses, let's say you spent $10,000 and you only got in $6,000 and you have a $4,000 loss this year. That loss doesn't go away. You get to use that loss. It's just, you know, depends on how you file and how you qualify whether you get to use that loss entirely this year against your income or you take it when over time or when you sell the house down the line. But you get to use it. It's definitely a loss. It's not like it goes to waste.
Okay, great.
So who does your taxes for you?
I have like H&R Block that does them.
Okay, so you would go into H&R Block, or if you ended up doing them yourself, let's say you're in this, somebody else who's listening is in the same situation, we use TurboTax. So you would just go to TurboTax, and it would allow you to run through the different scenarios. When you go to H&R Block, you're going to say to them, look, I had a $4,000 loss. And then based on all the other filing information, they're going to say to you, fine, you're going to be able to take that loss this year or you're going to be able to save that loss or you'll be able to take a piece of the loss because you only have enough income that's similar income to bounce off of it, but it'll, you know, you'll be able to take it in pieces going forward. Those are the different kinds of options, but it's definitely a loss and you definitely get to take it.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling the show. 26 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's squeeze in another call. Ray joins us on the line. Hi, Ray. We just have a minute. How can I help you?
Elise, I got a quick question for you. My son just got a job. He graduated college. and he's putting 10% of his pay into a 401k company, and then matching 4%.
Yeah.
My question is there any place else he can put some more money? I mean, his whole salary basically stays in his pocket.
Yes,
The company pays for his apartment and everything.
Wow, good for him. It sounds like a great job. Yes, he should open up a Roth IRA.
Okay, Roth.
Roth IRA, he can put up to $5,000 in after-tax money away.
Okay.
And then once it's in the Roth IRA, he'll have to decide where it is that he wants to make that investment. If he wants to invest in index mutual funds, which, of course, I like very much, he can choose where to open up the Roth IRA. He could buy individual stocks with it. He'll just get to make that decision, and I hope you'll be able to guide him with that. 27 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elyse Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elyse Glink. Thanks so much for listening. You know, the IRS is opening up for business this week, and it is important that you understand exactly what's going on. Here's a little tip that you may not have realized. If you have had your identity stolen in the last year, you may not realize that your tax refund and all the tax information that you file could be at risk. Really interesting. And I had sort of gone over this with you. I explained that my mother became part of a identity theft ring. It's a very detailed, very sophisticated operation, and they've hit her on every single level. And one thing that we did was we got a PIN number from the IRS. It's free. You can file a form and get it. And then nobody can file an IRS return in your name without having the PIN number. Very important to have that kind of security, especially if you've had your identity stolen. The IRS has offered up a couple of extra tips to ensure smooth tax filing process. I'm going to go through these. These are from the IRS directly. And by the way, IRS taxes are not due until April 17th because it's a weekend this year. And there's another one of those weird holidays, I think, in D.C. Number one, make sure you gather your records. So if you've been living in a shoebox or your records have been, it's time to get them out. Make sure you've got your receipts, your canceled checks, any documentation supporting incomes or deductions. Be on the lookout for your W-2s and 1099s. These are going to be coming to you soon. You can use the Interactive Tax Assistant file on the IRS website to answer tax questions, general filing information. Use Free File. If you have, it's brand name tax software, online fillable forms. If you make $57,000 or less, you qualify to use free tax software offered through this public-private partnership with manufacturers, and you can still download your own free fileable forms as well. You can do that at irs.gov/freefile, F-R-E-E-F-I-L-E. I would love for you to try the IRS e-file option this year. Last year, 106 million people, 79% of taxpayers, used e-file. Many taxpayers are required at this point in time to use e-file, and it's a much better way. Plus, if you get a refund, those are direct deposited within 14 days, and 98% of electronic filers do get some sort of refund. And some can be issued in as few as 10 days, which is great. So direct deposit is very important. You'll want to set that up. You can get all kinds of other information from the IRS. Download the publications. I was talking earlier about Publication 590, Individual Retirement Arrangements. Has all the information on IRAs, Roth IRAs, all the different numbers. But IRS Publication 17, which is called Your Federal Income Tax, is a comprehensive resource available for taxpayers on the IRS. And then slow down. If you're doing it by hand, make sure, even if you're entering the information, make sure your Social Security numbers are correct, that your math calculations are correct. Make sure you take the label off and you stick it in the right place. All that stuff is really important to getting your tax return done correctly. Those kinds of errors are what trip most people up, so make sure it's not you this year. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. Kenny joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, Kenny.
Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, thanks. What's going on with you?
I got a question for you.
we just recently moved to Atlanta from California. And in doing so, we tried to get a property management company, you know, to find our property. So we just signed a new 2-year lease in September.
Okay.
Prior to doing that, let's say maybe August, we start noticing foreclosure letters coming for the owner.
Okay.
To make a long story short, we just got a letter on our door 2 days ago saying the property has been foreclosed on. And going back and forth with our property management company, they were telling us everything was all right. So now my wife is freaking out because she thinks we have to get out tomorrow.
Well, I don't think you have to get out tomorrow. Can you call the lender? Because there have been rules passed where if the property is leased, what happens is you start, and what you should have done is if you noticed that you were getting these notices,
yeah,
you could have contacted the lender directly. You could have made payments directly to the lender. This is not to say that you had to or had any obligation. Shame on the management company.
Now, this is my question. Do I have any recourse? Because that was my whole purpose of going through a property management company versus a direct homeowner, because I wanted to...
You know, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, so I hate to play one on the radio. You could certainly talk to them and say, if you paid a fee to them, I think you're perfectly within your rights to ask for it back. I wouldn't make any more payments to them because you're going to need to move. And you're going to have to use some of that money for moving at some point. You can contact the lender. There are some rules in place where if the property is leased, that you're not supposed to be kicked out.
Right.
They may not know the property is leased.
Right.
So you can contact the lender and start working directly with the lender and bypass the management company as well.
Uh-huh.
So those are some options. You can also talk to a local lawyer, but it really stinks for you.
Right, right. And that's my whole point of trying to go through a property management company just to avoid this. I knew the turmoil in the market right now. Now, here's another question for you. Let's say the property is or it has been assumed by the bank.
Uh-huh.
Now, originally we wanted to do it like a leased option.
Okay.
Where we would rent it for a couple of years and then buy it. Now, the owner was asking for way too much money. He was asking for like $150,000, and the properties in the neighborhood are only selling for, let's say, $90,000.
Okay.
Right. All right, so let's say this has been foreclosed on. The home values in this area is $90,000.
Yeah.
Is there a way that we can probably work with the lender and the bank and try to buy the property ourselves?
You can talk to, I would certainly talk to the lender and see if there's a possibility. Usually when it goes into foreclosure, and it gets sold at the foreclosure sale, it goes into REO property, and then they find a broker for it and do all this stuff. But you're already in the property. It's always worth a phone call.
Right.
To see if you can buy it for the amount that's actually owed at it. Now, the problem is if the home value is $90,000 and they owe $142,000 on the mortgage, the lender's going to want $142,000 and you're not going to pay that.
Right.
So typically what happens is these properties go on the market and the lender has to get used to the idea they're not going to get $142,000 and they have to make the mental calculation about all the money they've lost. And it takes months and months and months for them to come down to a reasonable price.
Right.
So I don't know if it's going to work out for you, but what might work out is that you keep renting it.
Right.
And then you have to decide what you're going to do.
Right, right.
I think if properties in the neighborhood are selling for $90,000, you might just want to go and find one for $90 and go buy it.
Right.
Because it'll be less headache. It just means you have to move.
Right. Yeah, that's, you know, second to divorce, biggest headache movie.
It well, is, but you've just moved, so hopefully, you know, it's annoying for sure. But you're in a tough situation. I seriously want you to think about getting some legal advice.
Right.
Talking to a real estate lawyer who can help you figure out if there's any other options available to you or who would be willing to write a letter to the management company and or the owner. Those are, I think, some reasonable requests.
Right, right. Now, typically, I have been doing some, like a little research on myself. It says we have, like, I guess 90 days if we were already leasing the property before we have to get out. Is that the norm, 90 days?
I don't know if that's the norm, but I don't think you have to get out tomorrow.
Okay.
So I think, though, you are going to have to contact the lender. You're going to have to go around this management company, which is, you know, ridiculously ineffective. And
right.
They apparently don't know how to tell the truth, or they don't know the truth, which is a problem as well. And you're just going to have to get some real answers.
Right.
So it's going to be a pain any way you look at it, but at least you'll be driving the ship.
Okay. So we are in control, though. We are driving the ship.
Yeah, I think you have a couple of months at least until you have to move.
Right.
But you want to make sure the lender knows the property is actually inhabited. They
right.
may be thinking that the owners are living there.
Right.
Not renters.
Right.
So you have to make sure they understand that immediately.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Let me know what happens. 45 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. David joins us on the line from Conyers. Hi, David.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. What's going on?
I guess you're worth waiting out. Now, my question is, that was just sarcasm. I'm in a Chapter 13, and it's supposed to have been a three-year, which was just recently up, but obviously it's going to be a five-year. I mean, I thought I was, you know, misinformed on that, I guess, through my lawyer. So I don't know how a three-year turns into a five-year. I mean,
okay.
The main question is, since I'm in bankruptcy, I'm on disability, don't really have to file taxes because I don't make enough. My brother, which lives with me, you know, makes, you know, the majority of the household. So since I was in bankruptcy, I wanted to, like, put him on the home loan as an assumption. And they told me to send all the paperwork in, you know, the servicer that you have listed there, and that they would do it. But then, you know, when I called to check on it, they said, well, we can't do this because you're in bankruptcy, which they knew that the whole time.
Okay.
Because it would benefit him and the household, you know, if he can claim, you know, the interest. Because he's, you know, with me being on disability, he pays the majority of that interest.
So the problem that you're having mm-hmm. is that when you go into bankruptcy, the bankruptcy trustee is supposed to make sure that assets don't leak away. And they don't generally approve transferring assets to somebody who's not an arm's length transaction. So it's your brother, and he's living with you, and that's
right. Well,
that's the problem.
We've always had it, you know, and the lawyer said that, you know, just adding him, that it did not have to be approved by the bankruptcy lawyer. So, you know, go the route with the servicer and...
Well, it sounds like that's not true. So... The problem, so your brother, what you should have done or what you might have wanted to do is put your brother on the loan before you went into bankruptcy.
Well, see, they made me take him off.
They made you take him off.
Well, no, let's put it like this. He's always been on the deed,
okay.
not on the loan, because, you know, I don't want to mess up his credit for where I had to wait, you know, 4 years on Social
okay,
Security.
Okay, so he's on the deed.
He's on the deed.
Yeah.
Not on the mortgage, the loan.
Okay.
So he really can't legally claim the interest.
Okay, so this is just about claiming the interest deduction?
Right. Mm-hmm.
There may be a way for him to claim the interest deduction without actually being on the loan.
Okay.
So
well,
when we've had our tax people on, mm-hmm. they were on at the end of the year, and this question came up. And well, Bill Nemeth, who's the current president of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, I believe what he said was there are ways to go to the IRS and say, look, here are the checks that I have written to the mortgage company. I'm on the deed. I'm just not on the loan. And I'm the only one making these payments. And this is what...
He supplies enough money to the household in order for me to say, well, he, you know, I send the check in myself every month.
Okay.
And I'm the only one on the loan.
Right. But he can, other people, okay, so he may not be able to get the interest deduction. But
okay.
I think what
you
and.
Clear with bankruptcy, and then they will do that.
But I think that if you want him to be able to have that deduction, you guys should consult with a tax preparer, an enrolled agent, or a CPA who actually has dealings with the IRS on this issue,
okay.
and find out what you need to do to make that possible. It's entirely possible that if he starts making the payment directly to the mortgage company, that he will be able to, the IRS will recognize that and will allow him to write it off since he's an owner of the property.
Well, to be honest with you, and we was not going to do it this year. The last 2 years, I have allowed it, even though it's been reported in my name. So, you know, that could be a red flag when I don't, it's not claimed this year.
I don't think it necessarily is going to be a red flag, but if we're talking about enough money that your brother wants to take that and he's helping you out, it would seem to me that you'd try and figure out a way to make that work. I'm just saying it's possible that he could, even not being on the loan.
Okay.
So you guys are going
to
need more.
Tax advisor.
Yeah, you need to talk to a tax person who actually knows what they're talking about. And I wouldn't go back and ask your bankruptcy lawyer because I'm not sure he does know what he's talking about. But in the meantime, that would be how you might be able to make it work going forward for 2012 for the tax filing that happens in 2013. And good luck with that Chapter 13. I hope it gets wound up sooner than the five-year period. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Kling on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
4 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Flink. Adam Goldfein's coming up next. We have another couple of minutes to answer calls. Elaine joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Elise. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you as well. What's on your mind?
I have a question. I heard you mention in a previous call a website that I had gone to yesterday. I'd also heard Clark Howard talk about it.
Mint?
Sort of helps you with your budget and financing, I believe.
Right, mint.com.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and your question?
I was doing just fine. I created a user and username, password for it, and then it wanted some of my information, which I expected. But when I gave it my bank name, it wanted my username and password for my bank account, and I freaked out.
Well, the reason it asks that is that what this program does, and by the way, this program is now owned by Intuit, which makes Quicken and QuickBooks.
Okay.
It's got bank-level data security. All the different Intuit products like TurboTax are all involved in it. What they do is they actually pull from all the different databases where all of your banking information lives, pull it all into one place. So when you open up your Mint account, you have a dashboard that tells you exactly what level money you have or credit cards you have, you know, what's going on with your charges. All of those accounts are now in one place. And so you can look at it and make sure you understand what's going on, and then you can start entering in all your expenses and charges and things like that. So it does ask for that information, which feels funny.
Yeah.
But this is an incredibly tight, safe, secure site. It's as good as going to Bank of America or Chase.com or anybody else. It's really, really good. And if you look on the homepage, it's got stellar endorsements, right?
Yes.
Money Magazine loves it. New York Times loves it. I love it. Clark loves it, right? So, and if you look below at the bottom, it shows you that it's got the trustee certified privacy thing. It's got the VeriSign secured. It's got McAfee secured. It's got all, they have put so much money into security on this site that it is as good as any bank. Now, it's not saying that somebody couldn't hack into it, but this is a place where I would never, never send you, and neither would Clark, to a place that was at all possibly not secure for your financial information. But to get the most use out of the site, you'll have to put that information in there.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes me feel better.
No, and you're good. It's so good that you're cautious, right? I would so much prefer that you be cautious about this. Call us back. Double check. You know, ask again. Always, that is the first line of defense. That's the best thing that you can do.
Okay. All
but
right.
I feel it's secure.
Much.
Sure. Good luck and enjoy using it.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. It's 57 minutes past the hour. Let's see if we can get one more call in. Merle joins us on the line from Tucker. Hey, Merle, how can I help you in the next minute?
Hi, Elise. I'm calling on behalf of my nephew who has given up on his mortgage getting anything done. He has a first at 5 and a second at 9.
Okay.
He owes, the two of them are $190,000.
Okay.
His house is appraised at 140.
Okay.
He's given up. last fall he went to everybody and they said, sorry.
There may be an opportunity for him. He is seriously not delinquent. He's seriously underwater on the mortgage, right? He owes a lot more than the house is worth. But this quarter, the HARP 2.0, Home Affordable Refinance Program 2.0, kicks in for people who are seriously underwater. He should go to makinghomeaffordable.gov and look up and watch and talk to his lender and see when it's going to kick in for him and see if he qualifies. That would be the one thing that he could do. Merle, if he needs more questions answered, have him email me at my website, thinkglink.com. Thanks so much, everybody. The music's playing. It means we're out of time. Adam Goldfein is next, so you are in good hands. Stay tuned for him, and I'll be back next week. Have a great week, everybody.